Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Exciting as everything in Paris is right now, sporting venues can come back to earth with a nasty bump once the sporting circus rolls out of town. Rarely has this contrast been more bleak than in Qatar, where less than 2 years on from the 2022 World Cup, many of the promises about improving conditions for migrant workers appear to have evaporated into the sand. For more on this, we're joined by co-director of Fair Square, James Lynch. James, can you tell us, please, what did Qatar promise in order to answer concerns about its being host?
Yeah, good morning. I mean, yeah, Qatar, before the World Cup, made a series of promises. I mean, overall, it said, you know, this is going to be a great example of, you know, how we can reform workers' rights and how, and people, you know, FIFA and other people said this is a great example of how sport can kind of change things positively. And we saw some reforms. There was a sort of flurry of reforms in 2020, 2021, as the kind of criticism of the World Cup was at its, you know, at its peak. They said that workers would be able to change jobs. I think that's one of the most sort of core, the core promises that they made. And that you know, was a big ask that had been made of them. And they said that they would prevent abuse. They would deal with the fact that, you know, so many workers went unpaid and couldn't get any money back. So that's were the promises in advance.
Talk to me about that indentured service, people not being able to move their labour freely. How big a problem is it?
Yeah, I mean, like Qatar, as with other countries in the Gulf, operates the kafala system, which, you know, basically it's a system where workers, migrant workers, are kind of tied to their employers. So they haven't got the ability, if they are, for example, mistreated or abused, or they're not paid their wages, they haven't got the ability to just switch jobs, which is what, you know, most people do if they have a problem with their employer, is go get another job. That's probably your single biggest, you know, power that you can exercise, you know, in the event that your employer is sort of mistreating you. And they don't have that agency. They can't do that. They have to, basically the only option for them would be to go home, lose their job. And most workers are indebted, you know, to get jobs in the Gulf. Mm-hmm. Most workers from South Asia are paying, you know, upwards of $1,000 or $2,000, which is an enormous amount.
Okay. And 2 years on then, has the situation changed?
I mean, there was already a stalling in reforms, you know, in the year up to the World Cup, when I think, you know, Qatar realised, okay, nobody's going to take this away from us now. So we'd already seen a kind of stalling. And really, all the reports from the ground show that there is, the way that you could judge this would be, you know, a mark of success would be if, you know, if somebody from Nepal was saying to me, which Gulf state should I go to work? You know, if we could say, hey, go to Qatar, things are much better there, I think that would be a real mark of success. Nobody would say that. Like, the sort of transformation that we were promised hasn't happened. You still can't join a trade union if you're a migrant worker in Qatar. You still can't really move job, despite a law that says you should be able to. And you're seeing kind of some backward progress, you know, that there's been, in some respects, like, it can be even harder now for people to move job. And some of the things that were fought for look like they might be reversed.
This, of course, is your assessment. Now, FIFA conducted its own assessment of how things did or didn't improve as a result of the World Cup being hosted by Qatar. What happened to that report?
So, yes, they commissioned an independent review. That was last year, 2023. And then they got that report in the turn of the year. So I think it was December 2023. And then they approved it. The FIFA Council approved it in March this year. So that was a few months back. But we don't know what's in it. What we think it does is that it actually tells FIFA, look, you have a responsibility for a lot of abuses that were suffered by hundreds of thousands of migrant workers. That's what we understand. That it actually might be telling FIFA, listen, you need to actually pay compensation to migrant workers. That was a big campaign that we and other NGOs, human rights groups, were involved in, saying, listen, FIFA gave Qatar the World Cup without taking any care or any safeguards for the conditions that they would put this World Cup together in, and as such, it should compensate people. But that report has been buried. Okay. You are, of course, speculating here.
But I hate to be cynical, it would be fair to say, wouldn't it, that if it had given a clean bill of health to FIFA and said, yes, you absolutely did a good thing here, they would have published it by now.
You would think so. You'd think it would be a very quick, you know, release with a positive press release saying, hey, you know, the human rights around this World Cup were great. And the fact that, yes, it's been sat on since March, I think indicates that there's something uncomfortable here for FIFA that it doesn't want to share. I mean, what we were asking for in that campaign was that FIFA should just make available for workers about the same amount, or at least the same amount, as it was giving to teams, you know, as prize money. So that was about... It was about 300-400 million UK pounds, so about 400 million euros.
If you were trying to extract positives from Qatar hosting this event in 2022, might one be that it gave Qatar a place on the world stage, a country that at times feels that it is in danger of getting steamrolled by its bigger neighbours in Iran or Saudi Arabia, got to say, no, look, world, we're here, we matter, we're important.
I think that's exactly why Qatar wanted the World Cup. Yeah, I think that they wanted to sort of secure their place in the international community of nations, you know, by kind of meaning that nobody in the world hasn't heard of Qatar, doesn't recognize it as a country. And this is, you know, it was in, you know, the lifetime of the current ruler when Kuwait got, you know, invaded and nearly kind of evaporated by Iraq, by its sort of big neighbor who was looking for its oil. So I think it's not a completely unwarranted concern. And in 2017, you know, Qatar came under a huge amount of pressure from its neighbors. So it's the I think the problem is obviously that people have suffered in the event of it using this to sort of secure itself on in the international stage, and then the suffering of those people has been used in a way again to burnish Qatar's credentials as a great reformer. So that we've sort of had a double hit, I think.
And the conditions of many people are absolutely deplorable. If that is something that anybody listening to this is concerned about, they're probably thinking to themselves right now, look, the level at which decisions are made about who FIFA awards the World Cup to is something that is just so far above my pay grade, I'm not ever going to be able to influence it. Is there, though, a way that through our national football associations, fans can actually exert some influence?
I think so. I think, you know, it is become, I mean, you now have a situation where, of course, FIFA has a human rights policy. It's made all sorts of commitments, right? But we also see at the same time, FIFA is planning to give the 2034 World Cup to Saudi Arabia. That will be rubber stamped in December. The human rights risks in Saudi Arabia are far more serious even than in Qatar because it's so repressive. I think there is pressure on national football associations, and there should be, to speak out on these issues and to question the way in which, you know, events are being handed out, the way in which FIFA operates. You know, it has a very extractive business model. The challenge for, you know, national football associations, you know, like the Republic of Ireland and others, would be that FIFA has a monopoly on football. So there is only one way. You can only play football with the permission of FIFA. And we've seen that where football associations, you know, start taking political stances, that FIFA will use its monopoly position to actually step in and to intervene in those football associations. So I do actually think pressure on governments is important here. I think governments themselves, you know, governments should be looking at why it is that FIFA is operating in this way, you know, and completely ignoring the sorts of human rights concerns. I mean, if businesses, I think, were holding events like this, straightforward businesses which don't claim to be non-profit,
shareholders
like
would
does,
say, no, this is not acceptable.
Absolutely. Yeah, and they would be subject to various kind of laws about, you know, their supply chains. So FIFA gets away from it with it because it's, as a sporting organization, it sort of claims to sort of stand aside from the law, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, that is what we could do. James Lynch, co-director Fair Square, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. Coming up, looking for something good to read on holidays? Stay with us for recommendations on the best page turners.
text 51551. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.